In Search of the Castaways by Jules Verne. Chapter 1. The Shark. On the 26th of July, 1864, a magnificent yacht was steaming along the North Channel at full speed, with a strong breeze blowing from the Annie. The Union Jack was flying at the mizzenmast, and a blue standard bearing the initials EG, embroidered in gold and surmounted by a ducal coronet, floated from the topgallant head of the mainmast. The name of the yacht was the Duncan, and the owner was Lord Glenarvan, one of the 16 Scotch peers who sit in the upper house, and the most distinguished member of the Royal Thames Yacht Club, so famous throughout the United Kingdom. Lord Edward Glenarvan was on board with his young wife, Lady Helena, and one of his cousins, Major McNabbs. The Duncan was newly built and had been making a trial trip a few miles outside the Firth of Clyde. She was returning to Glasgow, and the Isle of Arran already loomed in the distance, when the sailor on watch caught sight of an enormous fish sporting in the wake of the ship. Lord Edward, who was immediately apprised of the fact, came up on the poop a few minutes after with his cousin, and asked John Mangles, the captain, what sort of an animal he thought it was. "Well, since your lordship asks my opinion," said Mangles, "I think it is a shark, and a fine large one too. A shark on these shores." "There is nothing at all improbable in that," returned the captain. "This fish belongs to a species that is found in all latitudes and in all seas. It is the balance fish, or hammer-headed shark, if I am not much mistaken. But if your lordship has no objections, and it would give the smallest pleasure to Lady Helena to see a novelty in the way of fishing, we'll soon haul up the monster and find out what it really is. What do you say, McNabbs? Shall we try to catch it?" asked Lord Glenarvan. "If you like, it's all one to me," was his cousin's cool reply. "The more of those terrible creatures that are killed, the better, at all events," said John Mangles. "So, let's seize the chance, and it will not only give us a little diversion, but be doing a good action." "Very well, set to work then," said Glenarvan. Lady Helena soon joined her husband on deck, quite charmed at the prospect of such exciting sport. The sea was splendid, and every movement of the shark was distinctly visible. In obedience to the captain's orders, the sailors threw a strong rope over the starboard side of the yacht, with a big hook at the end of it, concealed in a thick lump of bacon. The bait took at once, though the shark was full 50 yards distant. He began to make rapidly for the yacht, beating the waves violently with his fins and keeping his tail in a perfectly straight line. As he got nearer, his great projecting eyes could be seen inflamed with greed, and his gaping jaws with their quadruple row of teeth. His head was large and shaped like a double hammer at the end of a handle. John Mangles was right. This was evidently a balance fish, the most voracious of all the squality species. The passengers and sailors on the yacht were watching all the animal's movements with the liveliest interest. He soon came within reach of the bait, turned over on his back to make a good dart at it, and in a second bacon and contents had disappeared. He had hooked himself now, as the tremendous jerk he gave the cable proved, and the sailors began to haul in the monster by means of tackle attached to the main yard. He struggled desperately, but his captors were prepared for his violence and had a long rope ready with a slip knot, which caught his tail and rendered him powerless at once. In a few minutes more, he was hoisted up over the side of the yacht and thrown on the deck. A man came forward immediately, hatchet in hand, and approaching him cautiously, with one powerful stroke cut off his tail. This ended the business, for there was no longer any fear of the shark. But though the sailors' vengeance was satisfied, their curiosity was not. They knew the brute had no very delicate appetite, and the contents of his stomach might be worth investigation. This is the common practice on all ships when a shark is captured, but Lady Glenarvan declined to be present at such a disgusting exploration and withdrew to the cabin again. The fish was still breathing. It measured 10 feet in length and weighed more than 600 pounds. This was nothing extraordinary, for though the hammer-headed shark is not classed among the most gigantic of the species, it is always reckoned among the most formidable. The huge brute was soon ripped up in a very unceremonious fashion. The hook had fixed right in the stomach, which was found to be absolutely empty, and the disappointed sailors were just going to throw the remains overboard when the bosun's attention was attracted by some large object sticking fast in one of the viscera. "I say, what's this?" he exclaimed. "That," replied one of the sailors. "Why, it's a piece of rock the beast swallowed by way of ballast. It's just a bottle, neither more nor less, that the fellow has got in his inside and couldn't digest," said another of the crew. "Hold your tongue."